Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio, thanks for listening. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano and Walker Wildman. We posted the Breitbart story on our Today's Issues Facebook page about the success of the Target boycott so far. I don't know if Target knows exactly what to do about this situation. They've lost a lot of foot traffic, that is, people in their stores that otherwise would be in there. Mm-hmm.
The article, the originating article on Target shuttering some of these projects, oddly enough, at the bottom of it, let me cite it, it's called Recode.com, but they were the first breaking this news about Target shutting down these projects. At the bottom, this journalist essentially says, you know, Target CEO Brian Cornell is expected to present to investors on February 28th, you know, what he's going to do in the future with the company. But they said he's going to have to answer some tough questions to investors as to why they're not prospering, why the company's not prospering.
Yeah.
So,
well, it only takes like one percentage point of what to affect a corporation the size of Target. Now, they're a behemoth. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. It's hard to make a dent in that armor because they're so big. But I think we have. People got fed up with this political correctness, and now they said, you know what? I don't have to shop at Target. I can go somewhere else if they're going to let men into bathrooms with little girls.
Yeah.
I'll just go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
It's not hard to do.
And my point is, though, is that even these journalists who don't even, in this article, he doesn't even mention the boycott or anything. This guy's, you know, probably doesn't care about the boycott, but even he is saying, regardless of the boycott, their prices are down. Their profits are down. The CEO's going to have to answer for this.
Right. So we'll see what happens there. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio. Steve Jordahl from OneNewsNow.com, and American Family News is in with us. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Steve, we talked earlier in preparation for this show. We were talking about what's going on in California with this dam.
Right.
You want to tell us about that?
There's one of the largest, it is in fact the tallest, I believe, dam in the world, although it doesn't really look as tall because it's not the kind of dam that the Hoover Dam is. But as far as how high it is off of its base, it is the tallest in the country, I believe, and it holds back a tremendous, huge reservoir. And for years, California's been in a drought, and the reservoir behind this dam has been relatively low. Well, this winter broke all records, and now the dam is being overflowed. The Oroville Dam. Oroville is a town about, I would say, 45 minutes north of Sacramento by car on I-5. This dam is holding back water, which feeds down through the town of Oroville and surrounding communities, and that eventually drains down into the San Francisco Delta, the north part of San Francisco Bay. There's over 188,000 people have been evacuated in case this dam fails. It has the potential to be a very devastating disaster.
How many people have been evacuated?
More than 188,000 people have been evacuated.
Mm. So when you evacuate of course, you wouldn't have to tell me twice to get right out of there. But when you evacuate, that's people having to leave their homes mm-hmm. for an indefinite period of time.
I mean,
you can talk about 188,000 or 200,000 families, if you will, displaced. Does that mean they can't go to work in their town because they've had to leave?
Well, I mean, if they work in that town.
It depends on if the town is located in the...
That's what I'm saying.
Could,
well, no, what, they, is it, what does that do to a town?
They had the town is on hold. They had images I was watching over the weekend of people driving out of the Oroville place, and it was just lined up, blinkers. backlights. You know, it's kind of one of those Field of Dreams, the end of Field of Dreams shot from the air where they got the things. It looked like that, except they were fleeing. And I was hearing reports from people that were saying we had 20 minutes, they told us, to get out.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Now, you're from that area originally, right?
I'm from a little south of there, but California, right.
So you're saying, let's say the dam broke, right? That's what they're talking about. Or is it talking about the
The dam is, as far as the last I heard, and I talked to the Sacramento Bee this morning, the dam is holding. Mm-hmm. There's a spillway. Which is basically a safety valve overflow feature on the dam. And every dam has it. And it's designed so that if
the
water gets high.
Take the pressure out the dam.
Right. It'll overflow. Well,
That's still a lot of water.
Well, and it has broken. That spillway has broken halfway down.
Okay.
It's cracked. And so this morning, as of 8 o'clock California time, which would have been 10 o'clock, right about the time that today's issue started, they inspected things, and they said overnight the spillway did not get any worse. Mm-hmm. But they're still sending 100,000 cubic feet a second or something over this dam. It's just, and water is overflowing the top of the dam and draining down. So just an unimaginable amount of water.
So, but basically what you're saying is, if you live in the first town downriver, you've got 20 minutes to get out.
They told them that, because I heard people saying we had to grab our dog, our car, and just threw some stuff in a suitcase and we left. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a little contradictory to me to hear public reports that the dam is not in danger of breaking and that even with the extra flow and the broken spillway, that they still think that they can handle things, and that you tell people that you have 20 minutes to go. So either California is being a little bit closed with information about how bad it really is. They don't want to panic anybody. But when you say, I mean, I moved here recently from Colorado Springs. We had two devastating fires in Colorado Springs over the last 5 years. The Black Forest fire and then another fire that came down. And this is when you tell people you have 20 minutes, you have 10 minutes, or leave, when flames are bearing down on your house. If the dam was on the verge of breaking, I would say get out now because your house is going to be underwater. It could be underwater. What they're getting from the public safety people as far as how much time they had to leave and what they were getting from the public safety people as far as how the dam is doing are not quite aligned. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Well, most government agencies don't want to be responsible for a mass casualty because of something they failed to tell the public.
Right.
So usually they take broad and at times they go overboard when it comes to warnings, but you'd rather be safe than sorry. So
right.
Especially with thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
You've got a limited amount of time in which to get all those people out. So you may want to start right now.
Because
take X number of hours or days.
Good point, Ed, because there's only so many roads that go out. So even if you have days, it could take that long for you to get from your driveway down to Sacramento or wherever you're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio. We're on the internet at our Today's Issues Facebook page. You can check that out. Walker is posting the articles from what we've been talking about today, so you can have all the information that we've discussed yourself, access to it yourself. That's all conveniently put at our Today's Issues Facebook page. You can also watch the show there, comment on it. Steve Jordahl is with us from American Family News, and Ed Vitagliano with yours truly, Tim Wildman. What's the next story we're on to here, Steve?
Well, I thought it might be interesting to look. You mentioned, I think, off the air that Jeff Sessions has been
confirmed.
And so
sworn in on Friday, wasn't it?
Yep.
The new Attorney General from Alabama, the Senator from Alabama, was sworn in on Friday. President Trump's been waiting on that. The Democrats stalled and slowed down and tried to kill Sessions' nomination by calling him a racist. It didn't work. Probably would have worked had the Democrats had enough numbers, but it didn't work.
Certainly would have worked then.
He was confirmed. But anyway, go ahead.
I've been thinking a whole lot about the mood in Washington and among the elite. So Sessions made it through, and DeVos made it through. Tom Price made it through.
Health and Human Services.
You're now hearing that General Michael Flynn is in trouble as the, I don't know if you guys talked about this last half hour. So it just seems to be a very partisan thing. One of the stories I'm working on today is that the New York Times is launching a finance probe unit to look at the Trump White House. So in addition to, people that go to onenewsnow.com in the coming couple weeks, I'm going to be adding different stories to a series that I'm doing on the opposition to Mr. Trump. But this is where I'm starting. The New York Times is preparing to intensify, according to the Times, this is according to Fox Business, intensifies focus on the business ties and financial dealings of President Trump and his cabinet officials. The scrutiny on Trump and his administration's business dealings has been an ongoing narrative for the media outlets throughout the campaign. They are going to do what they can to try to find something on Mr. Trump and his administration. And as also, folks, if you could listen
to... That's almost as if the New York Times is opposed to President Trump.
Oh, couldn't
be. As if they were trying to find something for political reasons.
Like they have an agenda or something.
Right.
You remember the New York Times was the one during the campaign that came out and said, basically an op-ed that said, we don't know how to cover this presidential campaign because one candidate is the most qualified ever and one is a racist, misogynist,
right?
You know, freak.
You know what would be great? I would love the New York Times. I think this is great. To launch an investigative arm of your journalism company or whatever, but I wish they would have done that for Hillary Clinton while she was in the State Department.
It occurred to me as well, Walker. they missed the opportunity.
Then they could figure out all the conflicts of interest and all the money she's taken from foreign countries.
Oh, I'm sure they did, Walker. I'm sure they looked into all that and just couldn't find anything.
Well, that's tough.
Well, we're pegging the sarcasm meter. I mean, way in the red here.
You remember it was the Washington Post with Woodward and Bernstein that brought down the Nixon administration. Now, I don't want to compare the Nixon and Trump administrations where we clearly had a president that overstepped his constitutional bounds and interfered with an ongoing investigation with Mr. Nixon and Mr. Trump, who's just starting out and doesn't have any of that baggage. But I do want to compare the New York Times and the Washington Post. Ever since the Washington Post brought down a president, it has kind of been the goal of large newspapers to follow in those footsteps, to think that they have done something to make a difference, to leave a mark in history. And it's gotten to the point where they have sacrificed, in my opinion, as someone who looks at the field, they have sacrificed in many cases objectivity and good journalism for a grasp at the goal, at the brass ring, as it were.
Because that's the top of your field. That's Tom Brady winning the fifth Super Bowl.
Nobody has
done that since Woodward and Bernstein.
Woodward and Bernstein, a major Hollywood movie, All the President's Men. We still talk about the Saturday Night Massacre. You talked about when they referenced that when Mr. Trump fired his Justice Department person who decided she wasn't going to follow the law. It's become into the lexicon. And basically before that, the Washington Post was really in competition in Washington. And that put them a notch above.
Right.
All right. Today's Issues is the program. American Family Radio is the network. Let's revisit for just a moment the significance, Ed, of Jeff Sessions being confirmed as Attorney General. He was sworn in by the president on Friday again at the White House. I watched that, and he is going to be, I think he's going to be one of the best, if not the best, Attorney General we've had in a long time.
Well, Tim, the Justice Department is in charge not only of prosecuting on the government's behalf, investigating and prosecuting. So the FBI is kind of at least one of the investigative branches of the Justice Department. They investigate crimes on behalf of the federal government. So federal crimes get investigated by the federal by the Justice Department. The Attorney General, as the nation's head lawyer with his team, I think that would go all the way down to all the federal attorneys. They prosecute those. But the Justice Department is also given the task of defending federal law when it's challenged in court. So we have circumstances like under President Obama's administration where the Justice Department said, well, we are not going to defend, for example, the Defense of Marriage Act. We think it's unconstitutional, even though that issue is being fought about in federal court, but we have already made the determination, so we're not going to defend it. In my opinion, that is a dereliction of duty. So the Justice Department is incredibly important, and I think you're exactly right. I think Jeff Sessions, who's the three-term senator from Alabama, is going to play such a critical role in some of these battles because he will be charged with going after criminals, but also defending federal law in court, like we just saw with President Trump's ban on immigration and refugees from those seven nations.
You think but he's a racist, Ed.
Well,
what do you do with that?
I think that stuff's getting old.
The political left says he's a racist, and that's supposed to be
the death sentence.
Do you think it's the little boy that cried wolf syndrome now?
Are getting tired of it. I mean, look,
PC layout.
Well, if everybody's a racist, then nobody's a racist, actually. Okay?
You think
the real ones.
The definition has been so overused or so dumbed down.
You can't see the real ones. You can't see the real racists because everybody's a racist.
Well, they tried that with Trump, and it got him elected.
Absolutely. Well, it can. I think it is exactly. That's what an Aesop's fable, little boy who cried wolf? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the point of that little parable, is that if you keep saying something long enough, but you're just not serious, then when a real wolf comes and you cry wolf, you get eaten. And I think the parallel here would be if you keep calling people racist, then next time you do and someone's really a racist, they just tune you out.
Yeah, and what's odd is the Democrats are historically the party of racism. So it goes even farther than not only are they launching the claim at someone else, you turn back and look on the one launching the claim, and their party has racist ties. They're the party of segregation.
Had racist ties.
Right.
Yeah, arguably. They would argue that they've learned from their mistakes in the past.
They don't argue that.
That's why
they just ignore it.
Yeah, that's why they're for killing millions of black babies.
You mean the Planned Parenthood?
Right, they're for abortion.
And the Margaret Sanger and supporting that,
right.
That kind of thing. You know, I do think it's been there are other claims, too. You're homophobic, haters, bigots.
Xenophobic.
The whole PC lexicon used against people in America to shut down speech.
Yeah.
Or to shut down people as illegitimate. That's what the left is doing now with the Trump administration. This just goes back to the election. To me, it's just every day you see how the left controls the media and the entertainment industry, and they control the academic institutions in this country, and the globalism is a part of the left, and so many of the businesses and top money people in America are involved in this globalism business, that it's just shocking that President Trump was able to win at all. And, you know, you couple that with his own weaknesses, although he would never admit that he has any. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He and I mean that you need somebody confident and a little bit brash, but the fact that he was able to win is just stunning. That to overcome everything I just mentioned. Yes, Steve.
I believe we are taking the left and painting them as kind of crazies, and America is tired of them a little bit at our own peril. I believe that there is a little bit more organization coordination going on behind the scenes than most people want to acknowledge. That's what that's what this story I'm doing on the media. I'm going to follow it up with
stories. You mean the George Soros?
Well, Soros is funding a lot of it, but there's another, people are asking when President Obama is going to come and engage, and they have said he's setting up a shadow government. Mm-hmm. He's got people at the beck and call of one phone call, and he can basically.
The left's very orchestrated, that's no doubt. Sometimes they're more organized than conservatives are.
And I think the reason that no one saw the Trump thing happening, but you saw that regardless, whatever you think about voter fraud, you can make a case that there are that the country, if not in intensity, at least in how they vote, is pretty split down the middle. And it's who you can motivate the most to get out and vote as to who's going to look like the big mandate and the winner. And this time in 2016, it was disaffected Republicans and Democrats who were tired of Washington, the swamp, basically. That really resonated. Come 2018, if the Democrats are able to get their shadow government in place, if they are, and I'm saying that term in quotes, not being conspiracist or anything, but if they're able to do what they can, they're going to use the part of the politics of division, the Berkeley riots, and all these things that are extreme, to kind of paint a picture, and then the more reasonable liberals will come along and say, "Well, okay, we drug you 50 degrees to the left. Let's come back to 25 degrees to the left, and you're going to get a lot of people voting that way come 2018. If you don't get the base of the Republican Party or conservatives to now start mobilizing their defense of the agenda that they voted for in 2016, it's going to be a tough battle.
Right.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, the Prime Minister of Canada is in Washington today.
Hey, Trudeau.
Washington today. Hey. Justin Trudeau meeting with. I'm sorry, but does he shave?
He's in his 30s, early 30s.
He should not be allowed to be prime minister.
Well, he's 45.
I don't care. Trudeau. He looks like he's 32. So I would say I would say you go on what you look like. And he looks like he's 32 and should not be allowed to be prime minister.
Well, you can be 25 and be on the House of Representatives in the U.S.
I'm kidding. I'm shocked at the youth look.
I mean, Trump is 70.
He's in his 40s?
He's 45. Trump is 70, just turned 70.
Trump's old enough to be his dad, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. President Trump is old enough to be the prime minister of Canada. I don't know what they're meeting about.
Women in work. This was set up by Ivanka Trump, his daughter, and they're going to be talking about things like equality, the wage gap, business, and women.
Probably nothing gets President Trump fired up in the morning other than thinking about, I'm going to meet with the Prime Minister of Canada today, and we're going to talk about women at work, which sounds like a country band. Is it not?
Well, no, it was Men at Work, actually. No,
Men at Work. Women at Work replaced the Dixie Chicks as a new group. And
was that YMCA, their big hit, Men at Work?
Yeah, that was a different... Walker, Men at Work was a 1970s, 80s band from Australia.
Walker didn't care about stuff like that. I tried to educate him about the 70s.
It's too late now. Once they get too far down the road, Tim, you just can't help them.
All right. We are out of time. And we thank you for yours.
Tomorrow's Valentine's Day, gentlemen.
Don't forget that.
Do not forget.
Well, ladies.
Or ladies, that's right.
Two-way street. We'll see you next time on Today's Issues. Take care, everybody.